Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Awake, my love, I'm standing near. Your smile is sleepy, your eyes unclear. The morning sun has begun.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is a top to, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11,
oh,
11,
and most of
11,
and amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on the Horn. It's Boxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Boxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. your host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
Whoa! Yes! It's actually a show! Welcome aboard, everybody. It's, obviously, it's Sunday night. It's 9 p.m., or what is it? About 4.5 minutes after 9 p.m. on the East Coast. It's about 1:04 in the afternoon, Monday, here in Australia. And before I go any further, I gotta, because I wasn't on last week, gotta talk to you about these bushfires. You know, you obviously have heard. A real hell has come down upon Australia. This has just been some of the most incredible, the worst bushfires in Australian history hit last Sunday. They had started a couple days before, but things just really, really went to hell in a handbasket. On my birthday last Sunday, my 40th birthday will ever be marked for me as the day that Victoria burned. And it's just, you know, what's been going on down there has been incredible. And the outpouring of support. Sometimes I'm just so amazed at Australians and their ability to give. And if you're interested in donating to the bushfire appeal, you can do that via the Australian Red Cross. You'll be able to find them on the web, no problem. They have a special fund there for helping people rebuild their homes, farmers get back to working. This really has been something amazing. And what makes it all so much more diabolical is the fact that these fires were intentionally set. And, you know, I'm no fan of the death penalty. But, man, there's got to be something seriously harsh for anyone who would light an intentional fire in this country. I mean, it is the most, aside from being a firebug, is just kind of being sick anyway. But to think a nation that is a tinderbox, is just a tinderbox, waiting to go off at any second, to intentionally light a fire in this country takes a serious level of just evil and derangement. And, you know, the folks that are accused of starting these fires are in custody. On the same weekend, we had fires up here in New South Wales that were also intentionally lit. Now, you know, the environmentalists around here have been saying, you know, this is where we're headed, folks. You know, this country, as it gets hotter and drier, is going to burn more. So although these fires weren't caused by global warming made the damage much more widespread. And, you know, I mean, the weather here has been absolutely just bizarre. I mean, you know, we all got together. I was melting in my studio. You know, we were hitting, you know, in centigrade, you know, over 40 degrees every day, which is, you know, breaking like 105 Fahrenheit, right? Now, last Sunday, my birthday, it was scheduled to hit 47 degrees in Western Sydney. Now, 47 degrees, let's see, that's starting to get up on 120 degrees Fahrenheit. And Gail and I went out, I guess it was the weekend before, to escape the previous heat wave, and took a cruise to Newtown and went and, you know, hid in a pub and had a couple of drinks. And we went to our favorite Indian joint in Newtown. Used to be known as the old Indian diner or something, and now it's called something else that I never remember what it is. But anyway, we were talking to the owner, and here's this guy saying, man, he's like, you know, I grew up in India. It's hot. We get 40 there, too. But he said there is something seriously different about the 40 degrees in Australia than the 40 degrees in India. And he said this is something like he's never seen. And, you know, the reports earlier in the week, and we'll get just into these in some detail a little later, that basically the International Panel on Climate Change has basically come out and said, look, here's the skinny. No matter what changes we do right now, if we were to go to a completely carbon-free economy tomorrow, the changes in our climate are already set in stone for the next century. I mean, you got to think about that. I mean, this is the reality of us shitting in our own nest all these decades, coming to roost. And, you know, all the models say that this country is going to get hit first and worst. And it's not something that's going to happen in the future. It's already happening. What we have seen... Yeah. Angry Architect in the chat room says, 40 degrees hurts your face. Yeah, it does, man. Yeah, it does. And not to mention that here in Sydney, the pollution has gotten so bad that, you know, when this heat would come up, like last Sunday, not only did they have, you know, dangerous heat warnings, you know, like if you don't have to go outside, don't. But the UV rating, this one killed me. You know, here I thought the UV rating, you know, was like 1 to 10. Last Sunday, it was set to be 12. So, you know, this one goes not only to 11, but it goes to 12. And on top of that, there was a severe pollution warning. So people with respiratory problems and whatnot shouldn't go outside. How anyone now can deny the realities of what's going on just astounds me. You know, at the moment, Gail and I are actually looking for a new place. The owners of the place that we're in now are selling up, so we have to find a new place. And I had the deniers conversation with a real estate agent up north, and it was classic. It was classic. You know, I'm up north of Sydney looking at some places, and since a week ago Sunday, it changed up. We've been getting nothing but torrential rain. It has rained for the past week solid. I actually can see a little bit of blue sky up there, and that's the first time I've seen it since last Monday. And in that time, the temperature dropped. The high temperature dropped to 65 Fahrenheit for a couple of days. I mean, and this is summer. This is, you know, these extremes. You know, I'm up north, and it's kind of like raining while I'm riding around on my bicycle up in a place called Woy Woy, to go and check out some houses. And I get in this conversation with this woman, and I kind of lightly say, well, here you go, here's climate change in effect, and this woman just goes, pah, that's all nonsense. And I said, oh, really, you reckon? And she says, it's all cyclical. And so the first question I ask her, how much peer-reviewed science have you read? And without hesitation, she says, none. And I said, you're a fool. I don't think I'm going to be renting from that particular real estate agent. It was a friendly conversation, but, you know, to just hear this woman just go, it's all nonsense. And then this is like my favorite part. She says, yeah, but if you got all the cars off the road, that would fix the problem. I thought you said there wasn't a problem. But there you go. That's all I've got left. And there's a bit of environmentalist bashing going on. I don't think it's getting too much traction in the media here about restrictions on burn-offs, you know, controlled burns. And, you know, it's the environmentalist fault. Well, I don't really think you can peg it down to them. Now, if there are things that were put in place that kept people from clearing, you know, bushfire fuel, then that needs to be reexamined. But I think it was a cheap dig because they talked about... Angry Architect says, this is what you get, and talking about that real estate agent, that's what you get when you talk to Central Coast Bogans. But, you know, tell me about it. It's making me think, you know, when we do end up moving up that area, that I might have to be, you know, a little bit cautious about how, I may not, shall we say, advertise my fervent views straight away. I think I'll have to get to know people first. But, hey, there's a challenge for John. Keep his mouth shut. Never happened. So, yeah, being asked, is she an Aussie Republican? She's probably a liberal, mate. And the liberals here, remember, you know, the liberals are the right wing here. And I bet, I would guess that she probably is. You know, she probably, you know, this is painting with a very wide brush, but if she's high up and been doing property for all these years, I'd almost guarantee she's a right winger. But, you know, with this move that's been kind of forced upon us, we're taking it as a real opportunity because, you know, I've been complaining about the pollution and the traffic and the overdevelopment and everything else for, you know, a couple of years now. And so we're just taking it as an opportunity to get the hell out. We're going to move like an hour north of here, outside of Sydney, where, you know, you get more than a shoebox for a fortune. And we'll see how that goes. So as a warning, my show could be a little bit, you know, on again, off again over the next couple of weeks. Because if, you know, opportunities arise where I got to go run and go see something on a Monday, I'm going to do that. And also so you'll be prepared that sometime in the next couple of weeks, next few weeks, I will be moving house. So, you know, I will go on a temporary short-lived hiatus as we go through all the fun of getting internet connected and getting moved into a new home. But anyway, enough about that. Like I was saying before, about the fact that the changes in the climate are already a done deal for the next century, regardless of what we do. But that doesn't mean that we can continue on the same path we've been on. But there's also been other stuff coming out again, you know, I'm not happy about this, but I feel vindicated because I have been saying for years, every time they come out with a model, it's too conservative. And then the next model comes out and the process has sped up. It's accelerated. And I've always attributed it to the fact that the environment is one massive set of feedback loops. Well, continue to increase their energies. And from the BBC, you can also find this. You'll find links to this at the show post that ELO's put up over at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com. From the BBC, this was also at Huffington Post and a bunch of other places. But global warming underestimated. Professor Chris Field, an author of a 2007 landmark report on climate change, said future temperatures will be beyond anything predicted. Professor Field said that the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report had underestimated the rate of change. See, we keep with all these reports trying not to scare people. So we keep going on the more conservative side. Instead of being really, really, truly honest of what is being seen down the road. And I think maybe the time has come to stop sugarcoating this crap. We have fucked up the planet beyond measure. But anyway, continuing on here, Mr. Field said warming is likely to cause more environmental damage than forecast. Speaking at the American Science Conference in Chicago, Professor Field said fresh data showed greenhouse gas emissions between 2000 and 2007 increased far more rapidly than expected. We're basically looking now at a future climate that is beyond anything that we've considered seriously in climate policy. Professor Field said the 2007 report, which predicted temperature rises between 1.1 degrees centigrade and 6.4 degrees centigrade over the next century, seriously underestimated the scale of the problem. He said the increases in carbon dioxide have been caused principally by burning of coal for electric power in India and China. Also talks about wildfires. Professor Field said the impact on temperatures is yet unknown, but warming is likely to accelerate at a much faster pace and cause more environmental damage than had been previously predicted. He said that a warming planet will dry out forests in tropical areas, making them much more likely to suffer from wildfires. And when that happens, this is my addition, when that happens, we lose more and more of the carbon sink that we already have. The rising temperatures could also speed up the melting of the permafrost, vastly increasing the amount of carbon in the atmosphere. Without effective action, climate change is going to be larger and more difficult to deal with than we thought, he said. You know, can you argue with any of this? No. Because if you look at the science over the years, this has always been the case. As time goes on, it accelerates. And every time we make new estimates, we realize that the previous estimates were just, like, far too wimpy. Now, good sign on this is that, you know, President Obama has made some very, very kind of bold, especially in the American eyes, efforts to get with the rest of the world's program. And the UN is reacting very favorably, and I think maybe possibly now, with Barack Obama in the White House, we're going to be able to get remaining nations on board. Like, and I believe it's even South Korea is about to actually have the come out in the next couple of months with their own carbon reduction plan, one of the countries that hadn't actually signed on to a target reduction. But if the United States gets on board, India and China will follow. I do think it's a bit of a no-brainer. But when the largest economy in the world is continuing to just go on its own merry way, why should they change? I think it also played into Prime Minister Rudd here in Australia set out a climate target not too long ago, a whopping 5% reduction. But he did say that that can be changed with like a switch as soon as the United States gets on board and India and China then get on board. So it's all this hedging bets. I mean, I've been watching the right-wing opposition here in this country, and it's like, you know, just replace the Americanisms with Australianisms, and the Republicans sound just like the liberals. In fact, I keep hearing some of the same arguments. You know, we're working on a stimulus bill here as well. And one of the things that Rudd has in there is some money to install insulation in public buildings and some other things to help reduce energy usage. And what does the opposition hang on? What are you doing? What's this money for pink bats? That's what they call fiberglass insulation here. You know, what, pink bats? It's just like how short-sighted these morons are. One, you're going to pay someone to put insulation in somebody's home. What good's that going to do? It's going to decrease their energy usage, which ends up decreasing the cost of running that building or that home. And as Barack Obama said, help to relieve the impact and the stranglehold that the oil companies and the oil-rich nations have over us, being Australians and Americans. (sighs) Will in the chat room says, the Republicans sound like wankers to me. Well, you probably would be hearing them exactly as they are. And if you haven't seen it, got a link to it on today's show post, foxedup.headonradionetwork.com, to the Saturday Night Live skit. Dan Aykroyd comes back and plays Boner. And they just shred the Republicans. It is one of the greatest things I've seen recently. And yeah, it's just a thing of beauty. You know, if it weren't for the fact that it'd be like, you know, talking movies on the radio, I play the audio, but, you know. Good on Saturday Night Live, they're keeping on it. Yeah. Lottie says, you know, John, aren't they aren't short-sighted. They realize that by insulating the government buildings, the energy companies, their cronies don't get as much money. You got that right, mate. You got that right. But it's, you know, it just comes out so hollow. And, you know, they seem to not be jumping on anything that's major in these stimulus bills. This is where I see the such similarity between the liberals here in Australia and the Republicans is they will play useless opposition and play to party instead of playing for the good of the nation. And it's shit. To hear these sons of bitches go on and on and on and on and on. Same thing when we had a Republican president, when we had John Howard in office here, whenever the opposition started making noise about something real, they're accused of being obstructionist. But now when you have something that a majority of the people support, and they're just going on ideological grounds and sucking up to their own party faithful, I mean, you really got to think that these people, you know, aren't very patriotic, are they? I hate using words like that because I'm not a jingoistic person. But it's been amazing. It's been amazing. And you know, there's the Michael Steele comments from last week, you know. That ain't a job. This is a job.
What?
I had to play that clip about 10 times over just to actually make sure I was hearing it right. That a construction job for a road isn't a real job. It's just work. What a bunch of shit. And that the only real jobs are created by private enterprise. And they're permanent. But wait, lots of people have lost private sector jobs. Yeah, but they come back. They're reborn. They're reincarnated. What a bunch of fucking wankers. With that, I tell you what, we're going to head off to our first break here. So, you know what? I think this is going to be fun today. I'm really glad that I got to do a show today. So, with that, we're going to take our first break. And what am I going to play? We'll play this. Just this. I love it. Little Ozzo Motley. You listen to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be right back.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, your liberal voice, your place for conversation, and we'll open up the phone lines a little bit later. Joan's going to pull a bit of a filibobster here. And of course, the Screaming Jets, or as my t-shirt says, the Screaming Fucking Jets, that's who. All right, now, you know, talking about the things that we're not doing so much, but hey, there are sometimes the things that we are doing. Now, get this. This is very, very cool, and I want to see much, much more of this over the next couple of years. Links on the blog post, and please cruise by the blog, leave a comment, you know, say hello. The biggest ever solar deal has been announced, and we're talking a gigawatts. Check it out. The largest series of solar installations in history, more than 1,300 megawatts, is planned for the desert outside Los Angeles, according to a new deal between utility Southern California Edison and solar plant maker Bright Sources. The momentous deal will deliver more electricity than even the largest nuclear plant spread out among seven facilities, the first of which will start up in 2013. When fully operational, the companies say the facility will provide enough electricity to power 845,000 homes, more than exist in San Francisco, though estimates like that are notoriously squirrely. The technology isn't the familiar photovoltaics, the direct conversion of sunlight into energy, but solar thermal power, which concentrates the sun rays to create steam in a boiler and spin a turbine. Hey, sound familiar? Sound like something John's been going off about for, like, what? 18 months, 2 years. Now, I don't know if this has the geothermal reverse system storage bit to it. I do want to find that out. But this is what I've been talking about, the heliostats focused up on the tower filled with amorphous ammonia that run old-fashioned steam turbines. This is the most viable option for base load power generation that we have right now, and it's viable, it's real, it's doable, it works. And once constructed, is completely carbon-free. And here you don't have problems with, like, silicon supplies and whatnot when you, with some of the things that you deal with when building solar voltaics. But it continues on. We do see solar as a large untapped resource, particularly in Southern California, said Stuart Hemphill, Vice President of Renewable Energy and Power at Southern California Edison. It's barely tapped, and we're eager to see it expand in our portfolio. Bright Source is the reincarnation of Luz International, which built the only currently operating solar thermal facility during the 1980s in the Mojave Desert. After natural gas and energy prices plunged in 1985, that operation became unprofitable. The group's engineers and founders moved the business to Israel, where they continue to work on their technology. The new deal breaks the company's own record for the largest ever solar deal. The new installations, when completed, will produce 3.7 billion kilowatt hours of electricity per year. Previously, they cut a deal to deliver 900 megawatts of power to the Northern California utility PG&E. Coupled with our earlier partnership with PG&E, this agreement proves that the energy industry recognizes the important role that solar thermal will play in the energy future, said the CEO, John Woolard, of BrightSource. While BrightSource is a leader in the field, a variety of other companies compete in the solar thermal space. Google.org and other investors have backed eSolars with $130 million in funding. Abu Dhabi's clean tech fund, Masdar, has funded $1.2 billion solar thermal company called Torosol. Yet another player, Abengoa, recently signed a $4 billion deal with Arizona Public Utilities and Sterling Energy Systems, a company that has adapted the Sterling engine, a 200-year-old invention for concentrated solar power, even pulled in a $100 million investment. The first of the seven installations will be in Ivanpah, California, and will be rated to 100 megawatts of peak power. The company is expected to produce 286,000 megawatt hours of electricity per year. When all the installations are finished, they'll stretch over 10,500 acres of land. Now, it's funny, as I was seeing a couple of comments on a thread about this, and someone's sitting there going, well, wait until the environmentalists all go off about disturbing all that desert. Ain't gonna happen. Ain't gonna happen. We're talking the desert. We're talking, you know, it's large areas, but I mean, we're not talking about, you know, digging anything up. We're talking about putting a bunch of mirrors down. I don't think it's going to be a problem. But this is good stuff. This is really, really, really good stuff. I mean, I've been screaming about this technology for ages. And I mean, there's a similar plant, Victoria. Again, I don't understand, I guess because it continued to be able to let the Howard government say, yeah, but it still can't run 24-7. It would run 24-7 if you actually put the steam storage and reversed cycle, to use an air conditioning analogy, end of it, which was not factored into the Australian installation. I don't know if it's been factored into this one. I hope it is, because to me it just makes perfect sense. You know, I mean, anyway, and you know, it surprised me so when Bob and Nick were in D.C. and they had the guy from the Sierra Club on the show, and he wasn't even familiar with the Spegs system. The solar heat pump system. Which is what these systems are. He didn't even know about it. Now, how is it? How is it? This really, really shocked me. I mean, a little bit of like going, okay, I let the Sierra Club know about the most, you know, viable solar generation system on the planet. Why the hell didn't they know? Why the hell didn't they know about it? I really would love to have that question answered. I find it absolutely amazing that they, like, had no idea. I mean, how can you have a discussion about viability when you're not, when you don't even have the ammunition to discuss the most viable option we've got? You know, it's one of these moments. You know, microphone into forehead. I'm really getting tired of that grill pattern, though. You know, and I was amazed. I was happy to introduce him to it, and I hope that they research it and get on the bandwagon and saying, hey, look, check it out. You know, and like, these panels wouldn't even wear out in 50 years. It's just a curved mirror. A bunch of curved mirrors. Heating up a thing. Wow. I mean, the way the system works is so simple. In fact, if you check out the Thursday post from Bob's show in D.C. last week, you'll find links to the open source Spegs system, which is what these systems are, and a link to a BBC video where you can see the, at the moment, largest, fully bidirectional system in Spain. And it's rocking. It's absolutely rocking. It's outperformed all estimates. It's fantastic stuff. But yeah, I mean, so, you know, the math has been done with solar geothermal in a system where you store off excess steam that you produce during the day to run back through the system at night, or it can be done seasonally. So you can have a complete winter system. See, this whole system can be like readjusted from the poles. So you could use this at the poles. Have it run by the sun for half the year. And everything that's not used, it's not storing electricity, it's storing steam. It's storing pressure that then flows back through the system the other direction when there's no sun. If 100 square miles, it's 10 by 10 of the Mojave Desert, was allocated to this kind of installation, the entire U.S. power demand of the current day would be satisfied. That's right. The math has been done. I know I've said this before. And I'm not saying that we should go with only one option to fix it, but just to give you an idea of how much impact this technology could have. You know, don't have to worry about silicon prices. You don't have to worry about, you know, super high-tech manufacturing, because this is based on old, tried-and-true technologies. So, you know, and if, so why we don't have already marked out for 10 square miles of it, I don't know. Well, it may, and I guess this is the first step. This is the first step of getting there, and I was really happy to see this. Now, I know this is going to, you know, these things going in are going to freak out the coal whores. Because, you know, oh, what do you mean? Yeah. How many jobs would be created building a plant like this? And I guarantee a plant like this would need more employees to maintain it than the handful of people that go around blowing off the tops of mountains around Bob Kincaid's place. But I'm telling you, man. And if you want to get more information, if you don't want to go hunting through the blog to find the link, just Google SHPEGS. Spegs. That is what the system is based on. You can see wonderful animations and graphics and the science behind it. And it is an open source technology, which means that no one owns a copyright on it. This is being developed so that those that can get the investment can just utilize it. This is public knowledge for the public good. Now, these individual companies probably design their own systems. And they're probably able to put some sort of protection on those. And that's fine. But the base technology, which people can then base applications on, is open source. It's free. You don't have to pay for the rights to use it. And for those that wanted it again, SHPEGS, SHPEGS. Pretty damn sure that's what it is. And you'll find it. And it's solar geothermal heat pump something. I can't remember exactly how it's worked out, but because it's a funky, it's a very, very funky, it was an anagram thing. And, but I'm telling you, this is not hard technology. This is like really not difficult to do. It just takes some people with the vision, you know, like Bright Source, and a power company who sees reality. And here, obviously, this California utility company is seeing that, hey, you know, we got to start doing something. But anyway. There's so much work to do and so few people actually doing it. but I'm really happy to see that this is going down in California. Because, I mean, California is one of those places that has, you know, the environment perfect for doing this kind of technology. And so does Australia. You know, and I mean, even just straight geothermal power, like just pulling heat from underground, Australia's like made for it. Now, I know that there are transmission issues, but geez, imagine if you could tap into just all the heat energy that's trapped in all that red rock in the heart of this country where nobody is. The math, I don't have it in front of me, but I remember sometime in the last year, the math has been done there. Australia could meet all of its electricity demands with straight geothermal alone. Because we have the rock formations for it. You know, and it's regenerated every day. The sun heats the earth. And then we pull the heat from deep below ground to run steam turbines. See? It's all, you know, old technology, just powering it with a different power source. These would be similar turbines that run in the worst coal-fired power plants. But just by changing what it's being powered with, that technology's still viable. But we have the coal mafia here. And that's a problem. That's a problem that needs to be dealt with. Yeah. Betsy says, can't we just borrow technology from Europe? Well, you don't even have to borrow it. Betsy, a lot of this technology is actually the data and the methods are free. But, you know, like in the United States, you know, can't be too European now. Can't be too European. Europeans ain't American. I do see us getting away from some of that jingoistic bullshit, thankfully. Having a president that actually has lived outside the United States for some point in his life does make a huge difference. You know, going to school in Singapore, that definitely gives you an education and a view of the world that you wouldn't get being isolated in the United States all of your life. Because I was one of those people until I was 21 years old. Or no, 28 years old, pardon me. It wasn't until I was like 28 years old that I actually got off of the North American rock. You know, I mean, international travel, you can't exactly say, you know, international travel when you go to Canada or Mexico. They're just like the neighbors. And it's really, really easy to shit on other people's ideas when you have such an within-the-bubble view of their world. Am I going off on some weird tangent? I think I am. But, you know, we just got so much to do. And you know, these bushfires that we've been going through here, you know, I mean, they haven't been going, we haven't been going through, you know, our house being threatened. But, you know, we've got like 180 plus dead that's still expected to rise because they still haven't actually been able to get into certain areas. And, you know, this is the new reality for this country. Once something starts burning, man, it's going to be really hard to get it to stop burning. And unlike decades past where, yeah, you know, bushfire is part of nature's process. I mean, we have plants here in Australia that don't actually drop seed unless there's a fire. So, I mean, you know, bushfire is a natural part of the ecosystem, especially here. However, the big thing that keeps changing is the fact that this place continues to get hotter and drier. And hotter and drier for longer. And then when it's not super hot and dry, it goes and gets super, super wet for a short period of time. You get a whole bunch of new, fresh, light, leafy growth that then dries out when the heat kicks back in and you have more fuel than you did before for fires to go just absolutely batshit crazy. You know, some people were making comments that emergency services weren't on it enough because people couldn't get out in time. But this fire moved so fast. It moved so fast that our emergency services people who do a wonderful job, I mean, really, they do an amazing job, especially considering that most of them are volunteers. But they do an incredible job. They did everything they could to get people notified, but the fires moved in so fast that no matter how much time that they were given, no certain areas were not going to be able to get out in time. And it's really, this is the worst fire incident in this nation's history. And it's still burning down there. You know, it's cooled off up here. And it's cooled off a bit down south in Victoria and in South Australia. But things are still burning. It ain't over yet. And, you know, the southern half of this country has to seriously look at building differently. I mean, this is the new reality. Like I said, climate change and global warming may not have started these fires, but they are the reason that there was so much fuel for them to get completely out of control. And, you know, it just sitting here, you know, and on the day that it all got so bad, you know, Gail and I were basically just hiding from the heat. We weren't actually watching the news or none of that. I think we were just watching old movies and, you know, kind of tuned in the next day to find out that Victoria had just basically been charred. And I saw on the morning news this morning when they were, you know, they got the weather chick out, you know, somewhere, and she's actually down in Victoria where one of the rescue kind of base stations was. And there was a guy from Washington State, in the United States there, running the barbecue. And he and his family came over here for a holiday, and they've been around, I guess they've been tooling around for about a week. And just as the section of their holiday where they were actually going to just head to the beach and chill came, these fires hit. And this guy was so moved that he wanted to go and do something. So he's been there cooking food for the emergency services people. You know, and I mean, he doesn't have any investment in this country, but he said, you know, you're seeing these people suffering. You're seeing people losing their homes. You're seeing one unbelievably emotional event after another. And he says, how can you not be moved? So instead of being, you know, this is my holiday, he gave up pretty much the, looks like he's giving up a lot of the rest of his holiday to go down there and cook sausages for rescue workers. You got to think that's pretty cool. Oh, we're going to take a break. And got to find something to play. And not sure what I'm going to play. but, you know, I tell you, it's been crazy. You know, I still can't get over the change in the weather here. We were burning up a week ago, and then this whole past week, we've been, like, virtually cold. Because, you know, a 20 degree centigrade change in temperature in a day, actually in a couple of hours. It came on last Monday night, I think. And when the southerly that we look for in these moments came in, and the temperature just drops like a stone. And it might be still 85 degrees outside, but the wind blowing, you got goosebumps because the change has been so huge. With that, we're going to take a break. Got a break with a little bit of very strange Tool. Die Eier von Satan. And if you speak a little German, you'd be the one to be able to figure out that this is actually a recipe for hash cookies. Anyway, enjoy. You're listening to Foxed Up on the Head On Radio Network. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the lights in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
Hello, Cleveland! Hello, Cleveland!
It's hour two, getting all foxed up. And now, back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
Nobody knows you. Nobody even knows your name. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. It's about a minute and a half past 10 o'clock on the East Coast. That'll be, what, a little after 7 on the West Coast there, Mr. Tim from L.A. And it's just after 2 in the afternoon, Monday afternoon here, down under in the inner west of Sydney, Australia. And have you seen the Frank Rich piece in the New York Times this morning? I think it's really great. Because, very a little bit of a sarcastic headline. They sure showed that Obama. And this is one of a couple of pieces I've seen today about the Republicans living in this little bubble of their own. And when you work in a bubble that isn't reality, you're going to feel really good about the things you do, but when it comes to the public, it's going to backfire. And I think it is backfiring. You know, through all this stuff that's been going on with the bailout, yeah, the bailout ain't perfect. It was never going to be. But no president has ever gotten their economic policy passed in such short order. Right? And it's like the biggest thing that's ever been done in this country's history. And, you know, there's a lot of making fun of Obama with his, you know, court of the Republicans and all that. But Obama even said today, I'm an eternal optimist, but I'm not a sap. And I think that the way that he's played this, no matter how much it's frustrated us on the left, you know, I think he played the cards he needed to play. He said, okay, I'll play the bipartisan game. I'll invite you all around for drinks. We'll talk about things, bring in, even though we don't need to. You know, passed in the House, no problemo. It's great to see that vote, you know, 200 and something Democrats versus 100 and something Republicans, aside from the 7 Democrats that voted against. And Obama stuck to his guns. And the American people actually haven't, you know, waned in their support of the man. And I think it was so obvious, it's been so obvious, the political calculation in this opposition. I mean, when you end up coming in and savaging the Democrats' bill and then still not voting for it, I think that's a huge sign that you are a hypocritical wanker. But the Frank Rich piece, the opening, I love it. He says, am I crazy or wasn't the Obama presidency pronounced dead just days ago? Obama had all but lost control of the agenda in Washington, declared Newsweek on February 4th, and it wondered whether he might even get a stimulus package through Congress. Obama losing stimulus message war was the headline at Politico a day later. And the mostly liberal MSNBC, the morning host Joe Scarborough, who is not a liberal, started preparing the final rites. Obama couldn't possibly eke out a victory because the stimulus package was a steaming pile of garbage. Less than a month into Obama's term, we don't and can't know how he'll fare as president. The compromised stimulus package, while hardly garbage, may well be inadequate. Timothy Geithner's uninspiring and opaque stab at a bank rescue is at best a placeholder and at worst a rearrangement of the deck chairs on the TARP Titanic, where he served as Hank Paulson's first mate. But we do know this much. Just as in presidential campaign, Obama has once again outwitted the punditocracy and the opposition. The same crowd that said he was a wimpy hope monger who could never beat Hillary or get white votes was played for fools again. On Wednesday, as a stimulus deal became a certainty on Capitol Hill, I asked David Axelrod for his take on the Groundhog Day relationship between Obama and the political culture. It's why our campaign was not based in Washington, but in Chicago, he said. We were somewhat insulated from the echo chamber. In the summer of 07, the conventional wisdom was that Obama was a shooting star. His campaign was irretrievably lost. It was a ludicrous strategy to focus on Iowa, and we were falling further and further behind national polls. But even after the Iowa victory, the same syndrome kept repeating itself. When Obama came out against the gas tax holiday supported by both McCain and Clinton last spring, Axelrod recalled, everyone in D.C. thought we were committing suicide. The stimulus battle was more of the same. This town talks of itself and whips itself into a frenzy with its own theories that are completely at odds with what the rest of America is thinking, he says. Once the frenzy got going, it didn't matter the most that most polls showed support for Obama and his economic package. If you watch cable TV, you'd see our support was plummeting. We were in trouble. It was almost like living in a parallel universe. Hey, opposite world. Welcome, guys. For Axelrod, the moral is not just that Washington is too insular, but that the American people are a lot smarter than people in Washington think. Here's the third moral. Overdosing on this culture can be fatal because Republicans are isolated in that parallel universe and believe all the noise in its echo chamber. They are now as out of touch with reality as the inevitable Clinton campaign was before it got clobbered in Iowa. The GOP doesn't recognize that it emerged from the stimulus battle even worse off than when it started. The obliviousness gives the president the opening to win more ambitious policy victories than last week's. Having checked the box on attempted bipartisanship, Obama can now move in for the kill. And I hope he does. If you think back to during the campaign, during the Republican National Convention, when all the talking heads on our side were going, he's not being aggressive enough! He's being a wuss. And I actually said at that time, saying, everybody just chill out. You know, there was that great T-shirt that was at Bart Cop, you know. Y'all chill the fuck out. I got this. And I think, again, we're seeing that, you know, I do have issues with things in policy, but we're only just learning about what policy even is, you know. I mean, we're just getting there. The guy's been in office like 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. It'll be 4 on Tuesday. But, you know, you play the bipartisan card, and these guys turn around and screw him. You know, as Rahm Emanuel said, a guy I don't like, but I think he's good in the job he's in, said, you know, fool me once. It ain't gonna happen again. So I think, you know, I mean, it's been a wild couple of weeks, and I think we're you know, at the beginning of what's going to be an incredibly tumultuous decade. I think the next 10 years are just going to be, you know, completely unpredictable. We're going to end up doing things that we never thought possible. I mean, geez, you know, Senator Lindsey Graham, and when are you going to be honest with yourself and the world, Senator Graham, and come out? I mean, it's really hard to believe anything you say when you can't be even honest with yourself. But that's a side conversation. But he even on Meet the Press this morning made a comment about that we may have to look at nationalizing the banks. What? What? Did I just hear a conservative Republican say we may have to nationalize the banks? Which Obama's not even talking about. Last Tuesday, Sweden's got a different system because they went and you know, basically took control of the banking system there, but they had fewer banks. And it was a different system, and Obama said, you know, like to maintain the private equity that supplies most of the loans and whatnot. Now, I might not necessarily agree with that, but then to hear someone like Senator Graham actually say, you know, we might have to nationalize the banks, and you're going, whoa! Oh, Cossack, you and my friend Scott Barry need to meet. Cossack says, what do you mean 10 years? We've got till 2012. Scott keeps saying, every time I come over and I go, ah! And he goes, don't worry. Mayan calendar's about to finish up. Don't worry, it's all going to be over. You know, keep playing the game till then it's all just going to poof, all, see you, bye. So you're in great company, Cossack. And if you're not in the Head On Radio Network chat room, you got to get there. Head on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on live chat, and quick sign up, dive in the pool. Got a pretty good crowd in there for a Sunday night at the moment. And, you know, you can get distracted as a show host just watching the chat go by. But, you know, I do think, once again, Barack Obama is going to prove in time to have outplayed everybody. Now, the results that he gets with what he does, still a complete unknown. Still a complete unknown. But with all this bullshit game playing that's been going on, you know, and I mean, the height of the hypocrisy for me, aside from the fact that the right wing, all they can do is go, tax cuts, tax cuts, tax cuts, hasn't worked before, but tax cuts. But that greatest hypocrisy, though, is all they're screaming, going, this ain't a bipartisan deal, even though you got invited for drinks, all kinds of talks and everything else. You know, it is a Democratic Congress. I think that they have the right to
write legislation to then be voted on.
But to to then turn around, savage the thing, get all their tax cuts that they wanted in, getting the money for, you know, family planning pulled out and all this other stuff pulled out, and then none of them vote for it? You are a bunch of stinking, shitty hypocrites. And then they hang on things like $50 million for the arts. What? You're going to bitch about that? That's like not even a drop in the bucket of the whole thing. You know, Senator Schumer on This Week with Snuffleupagus was saying, hey, you know, I'm from New York. I happen to think that the arts community is a great economic generator. So I support that. I think it's fine. But you cannot possibly use that as your reason to vote down the whole stimulus bill. And I mean, and they used even sillier reasoning than that, some of them. After things were removed, they kept talking about the things that were removed as reasons for why they weren't going to sign on. So, I mean, it's all just bullshit. It's all just crap. And they don't have any ideas. You know, if you don't have any ideas, just get the hell out of the way. And, you know, and there's things where even the Democrats have done things that I kind of like that Obama didn't even want. The bonus limitations for banking executives that have taken, you know, Obama backed down on that, which I didn't think was a great thing. But, you know, that's politics for you. And then the Democrats stuck it back in the bill, which was passed. Now, you know the executives will find ways to get through this. They'll find loopholes. But it's a big step. It's a big step to actually put something in legislation. And Barney Frank has been another guy over the last couple of weeks that I've been watching with great pleasure. You know, I think Barney Frank's a bit of a champion. Because he is leading this growing populist movement. You know, the bankers being grilled earlier this week. You know, Rachel Maddow did a great piece on it. You know, that kind of excitement that you felt in the pit of your stomach, that's your inner populist. And we're seeing a growing populist movement in the United States. And this is something that I'd like to see grow. Now, I know that, you know, I think the biggest problem that we have even more than the Congress is the Senate. That is just too much of a boys' club. You know, it's like this closed society thing. I'd like to just see the entirety of the Senate just removed and vote in a whole new mob. I'd like to see them all go. But we've got what we've got, you know, and Obama's going to have to find a way to work with it. And then again, healthy opposition is good, but see, I don't think that the Republicans are in the frame of mind yet to be a healthy opposition. They're still a party just in complete disarray, because now for two congressional elections, they've been decimated, right? And, you know, some of their own, especially the governors, there's not a Republican governor who is against the stimulus. And there's really good reason for that. Governors have to do things. Governors have to get the garbage picked up. Governors have to, you know, keep the parks clean. Governors need to, you know, keep schools open. Governors need to do all this stuff. Unlike, you know, when it comes to top-level positions in U.S. government, probably the one of the most important positions anyone can hold in the way of being connected to people is a state governor. My former governor, Tom Keene, Republican. I've told this before. You know, it's a statement I'll never forget. After he had such a great run as governor of the state of New Jersey, and, I mean, hey, the guy really turned New Jersey around back in the 80s. You know, changed it from being the country's dumping ground to being a place that business looked to move to over Manhattan for a long time. It was a really good thing. Got us out of deficit into a surplus. Did a great job. And so when his term limit was coming up, the GOP was looking to him to be a presidential candidate. You know, they're kind of like going, hey, you know, you've been good for the brand. Hey, step up. I went, nah, no thanks. Because if you actually want to help people's daily lives, there is no more potent position to have in government than a state governor. And to move on to federal politics would be deflating. And so for him, so when Charlie Crist, you know, goes and has Obama down into Florida to help promote the stimulus, and he's there introducing him with, you know, a big crowd that's happy to see our new president, and he's got a big smile on his face like, yeah, I'll stand with this guy. Man, that's got to piss off the GOP. But governors can't play politics the way that senators and congressmen can. Because they have stuff that actually has to happen. And if it doesn't happen, boy, are they going to hear about it. So, you know, the stimulus has a bunch of, $45 billion to help prop up the states for a while. And I think that is completely reasonable. All those, you know, government jobs that people already hold, you know, won't be lost. You know, part of turning something around is, you know, to stop the bleeding first. And so as far as I see, $45 billion to the states is all about stopping the hemorrhage. And there's a way that they can stop the hemorrhage. Keeping people employed in their current jobs and getting what they, as they term, shovel-ready projects to go. There is something tangible that we will see the effects on pretty well straight away. Now, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that, you know, that I've got issues with. You know, I mean, the tax cut thing is just, you know, it's kind of like cutting off your nose despite your face. You know, there's another one of my favorite bits of hypocrisy. You know, the Republicans had a bill that was all tax cuts. It was going to pull, what, $2.5 trillion in income out of the federal government. And John McCain has the fucking audacity to stand up there in the Senate and call what Obama's doing generational theft? What a bunch of crap. Tim from L.A. saying Keynes? What about him? Obama doesn't believe in that whole Keynesian system. And there is an ideological difference. But hey, which ideology got us into this shit? And we need to call these people out for what they are, which is hypocritical bastards. And, you know, it's all that primary challenge crap that, you know, if they were to back Obama's stimulus package, that means when their primaries come up, some right-wing fuckwad can come in and maybe get the nomination for the seat because only 9 or 10% of registered voters come out in primaries. So your most fervent kind of wing nutty side will come out and end up nominating. Right, spending works. Spending works. You know, that was always one of my favorite things when Obama found his verbal spine on this. although intellectually I think he had the spine. But when he finally came out and said, you know, all of you that are talking about this recovery plan as being a spending bill, what the hell do you think it, what the hell do you think the it is? Stimulus is a spending bill, you jackasses. Using a synonym to try and have it have a negative connotation. What a bunch of crap. So let's talk like adults about what's going on. Absolutely incredible. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a break here in a second, and then we're going to open up the phone lines. So if you got something to bring in on all this, if you think I'm just insane or you got some more information to put into things, you know, get in on it. 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. You're listening to Foxed Up here on Network. And we'll be right back.
She was living in a single room with three other individuals. One of them was a male, and the other two, well, the other two were females. God only knows what they were up to in there. And furthermore, Susan, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to learn that all four of them habitually smoke marijuana cigarettes. Reefers.
Want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Everybody, welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And if you want to get on in on things, give us a bell, 304-574-7811. That's 304-574-7811. And Texas Betsy just sent me a link from relaxedpolitics.com, a blog that she writes on. But there's a post from our good friend Cassie, who just really, really is amazing. This girl just really can write her age and pay grade. And I know she's been doing a bit of a research paper for school at the moment on the Great Depression. So she's turned, obviously, some of that research into a really wonderful post here. It says, "The Great Depression, the New Deal, and their echoes in 2009. Genuine and dishonest comparisons." I swear, you got a teenager that writes stuff that is, you know, so much, I don't know, just... so much more well-written, as my English falls apart trying to make a statement, than some of the big paid columnists out there. And she says, while it's certainly true that historians and economists are still debating the actual causes of the 1929 to 39 Great Depression, some lawmakers and political pundits today are nevertheless making bold and ludicrous claims about what happened back then to support their agendas. Even so, it is still possible to come to a general agreement about some of the positive results of Franklin Delano Roosevelt's New Deal programs, despite the partisan bickering. She links to a timeline that shows the date of each relevant event in the, of the 1920s and 30s. Many of the country's financial problems began even before the 1929 stock market crash. FDR was elected in 1932 and took office in 33, when the Depression was already 3 years old, but the this fact has escaped the notice of many today, as the website Think Progress explains. And from Think Progress, it says, in recent days, conservatives have been trying to block an economic recovery package by arguing that government spending will wreck the American economy. As an example, they point to FDR and the Great Depression. Earlier this month, for instance, Senator John McCain inaccurately argued that the New Deal exacerbated the Great Depression. In a new interview with the Columbus Dispatch, Senator Steve Oster of Ohio joined in. When President when FDR did this, he put our country into a Great Depression, Austria said. He tried to borrow and spend. He tried to use the Keynesian approach, and our country ended up in a Great Depression. That's just history. Huh? The Columbus Dispatch then notes, most historians date the beginning of the Great Depression at or shortly after the stock market crash of 29. Roosevelt took office in 33. As Dean Baker has explained, Roosevelt's New Deal agenda lowered the unemployment rate from 25% in 1933 to 10% in 1937. The economy turned bad again when the blue dogs of the Roosevelt era won sway and got Roosevelt to cut spending and raise taxes. There you go. There you go. Right there. Thank you, Cassie. It couldn't be clearer than that. when things started to not work was when FDR bowed to those that wanted the tax cuts. And all the improvements to the economy started to ebb. They saw that and said, hey, this just doesn't work, and we're going to let's go back to the other thing. She goes on, she says, other Republicans are also misrepresenting the history, including Senator John McCain. McCain claims FDR exacerbated the Great Depression, calls for counterproductive balanced budget provisions. McCain, a top Senate critic of President Obama's economic recovery plan, has been complaining that the package has no provisions to put us on the path of a balanced budget. You know, it's again, the Republicans want to have arguments that aren't actually about, you know, what we're dealing with. You know, there are other times in history for balanced budgets. I'm into balanced budgets. But this ain't that time, man. This ain't that time. McCain is pushing an alternative plan that says he would achieve this by enacting automatic spending cuts after the U.S. again experiences positive economic growth. Appearing on Hugh Hewitt's radio show last night, McCain repeated his complaint that Obama's stimulus plan wasn't putting us on a path to a balanced budget. Well, it's not supposed to be a balanced budget, you fuckwit! I mean, come on! Are you that damaged for having your ass kicked so bad? I was reading a piece earlier today via the Huffington Post where, you know, the Dems are starting to look at McCain as not just the angry, you know, Republican. He's the angry, defeated old man. You know, I kind of thought we were going to see McCain return to a little bit of the fairy tale guy that everyone likes to purport him to be, but that's just completely not happened. You know, I mean, is the guy losing it a bit? You got to wonder. I mean, come on. And I find it just amazing how these people will try and really lie and rewrite history. It's just bizarre. But, I mean, it really has to make you wonder. The Republican Party as a body, the GOP, do they really care whether or not the people of the nation are hurting? I think not. I think they really couldn't give two shits. You know, and I guess this has really got to be just giving them just the most unbelievable shits. I mean, the Republicans, you know, all through the Reagan years and beyond have been trying to rewrite the New Deal. And to 80 years along, suddenly be in a situation where we're being forced to look at some of the same moves just to survive as a nation has to be a bit of a reality. You know? This is and so they're just going to live in opposite world and I don't know, continue their thing. But Betsy's post goes on from there. I do suggest reading it. At the moment, it's the second post down at relaxedpolitics.com. Check it out. It's a really great blog. they have a page called the Obama Cake and Cookie Pantry. Now, that's not a lefty blog at all, is it? I love it. And you're welcome, Betsy. now, let's see, before we wrap up hour two and get into DJ time, I have no idea what I'm going to play tonight. I'm just completely going to make it up as we go along. But Gene sent this to me, as most of the stories that you're hearing about today, and you can find the links at foxedup.headonradionetwork.com at the show blog. And the News Ninja sent this to me. Funny that in America he sends me a link to the Australian ABC, but hey. Victoria, going back to the bushfires, you know, I'm running kind of left, right, back, forth, and I'm pulling it back to where I was about an hour ago. Victoria could face worse fire danger next summer. And this is what I mean, like, the new reality is upon us. Is upon us. Tim's going, Rush? Yeah, we'll play some Rush, mate. An expert in climate modeling says next summer could see even higher fire dangers for Victoria due to extreme temperatures. It has been predicted that an El Nino climate event could hit Australia this year, causing higher than usual temperatures across the country. Professor Roger Stone from the University of Southern Queensland has told ABC Radio's AM program that the added risk highlights the need for a risk management approach. At the moment, there's a probability about a 60% chance of an El Nino developing by midwinter. If that happens, that will exacerbate the whole drought and therefore fire situation over a lot of Australia, not just Victoria, for next summer. So even though it's not guaranteed at this stage, a risk management approach has to be developed for such an event. Of course, it covers more than Victoria. This means the resources are spread thinly over Queensland, New South Wales, Tasmania, and so on. And firefighting and water supply systems and so on are much more thinly spread. So it becomes quite a major national issue then. So next summer is looking a bit worrying at this stage, even at this early stage. So the El Nino is like just kind of coming in now. We're at the tail end of a La Nina. And so we got this year, and it's supposed to be the wetter, cooler? They're expecting this next summer in this country to be deadly. I mean, not being over the top about this. Deadly. I'm really surprised there weren't more deaths here from the heat over the last few weeks. And further on down the piece says temperatures on the rise. Average Australian temperatures are expected to rise between 0.6 and 1.5 degrees Celsius over the next 20 years, according to Dr. Penny Wheaton from the Centre of Australian Weather and Climate Research. She said it is more likely the rise will be at the upper end of the scale. I think the warming at the low end of that range are going to be reducing their likelihood unless we can start reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. Dr. Wheaton says this will lead to more hot days, a drop in rainfall across southern Australia, and will increase the intensity of tropical cyclones. Some of these sorts of changes are detectable now. We can see an increase in temperature in the Australian region over the last few decades. There's also been an increase in frequent hot days, decrease in cold days. So the changes are already taking place, but what we expect is that as the decades go by, these changes will get stronger. See, it's all just more and more of the same information. It's just constantly being reaffirmed. The planet's on a collision course with extreme weather events. And this place is going to get hammered. There were times as we've had a bit of a break from the heat, you know, having a chat with Mr. Juggernaut, my next door neighbor, and a few other people, you know, I was saying that there were a few days during the heat waves here that I really thought I was losing my mind. I really thought I was starting to go bonkers. And I really think that we're getting to the point where we're hitting temperatures where it's just not fit for human habitation. I mean, we've really gotten to that. We have gotten to that point where it's just going to cost, where it's just going to be so hot and so dry and so just insane. Side chats with Ben. He's a funny guy. Sorry. Having a private moment. But yeah, so that's where Australia's headed. Hot, dry, just insane. I'll add these into the supplementary links after the show. But Trouble sent me a couple of things on cool new, you know, hybrid and electric cars. Now, one is a crazy prototype kind of thing. But this I thought was interesting. The link that she sent me for not quite as cool looking, but still, this is actually in production. The Prius has just been knocked down a peg. Ford Fusion Hybrid tops the Camry. And, I mean, this might be why Ford is in a better position than the rest of the automakers. Because I do believe it's Ford that hasn't asked for any money yet. But it says, if you're in the market for an ultra-fuel-efficient hybrid that makes a convincing family sedan, your best choice has always been a Toyota, until now. Toyota's Camry Hybrid and Prius have been the only realistic alternatives for many. Most American-built hybrids simply haven't matched their fuel economy, and the Nissan Altima Hybrid remains rare and hard to find. A new entrant into the contest, however, may have knocked the Toyotas from their lofty perch. The automotive press has begun testing the all-new 2010 Ford Fusion Hybrid in recent weeks. Two prominent publications have now published comparisons putting the Fusion Hybrid against its Toyota competition, and the Ford has won both. USA Today writes, okay, let's just get it out there. The 2010 Ford Fusion Hybrid is the best gasoline electric hybrid yet. What makes it best is a top-drawer blend of an already very good-sized mid-sized sedan with the industry's smoothest blah-blah-blah powertrain. So well done that you have to look to the $107,000 Lexus LS600H hybrid to come close. The Prius crowd will protest, they note, but USA Today says Ford's car simply drives better. A car is, after all, a driving machine. Brownie points that for saving somewhat more fuel and offering a cargo-friendly hatchback, but driving feel is more important, blah, 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 blah. Well, there you go. Base price is like 28 grand. Not too bad. Now, I still think, you know, we need to get away from just the hybrid thing and get to completely off of petrol vehicles, but hey, this kind of thing could be the difference for Ford against the rest of the American manufacturers. I mean, it looks like Chrysler's just, or GM's just shot. You know, either more bailout money or we go bankrupt. Right. Yeah, okay. And Tim's just put a link in about the Ford Fusion as well, saying it's $1,000 more than the Camry Hybrid, but they can get optional GPS, heated leather seats, and a Sony audio system. So obviously this is a little bit more posh, a little bit more nice. I'll tell you what though, when I've been, you know, cause I travel by bicycle mostly. And a few weeks ago I was riding around Newtown and, I ended up behind a Prius. And it was really cool. Couldn't hear it. Couldn't hear it at all. I thought it was just the neatest thing. And as they drove by me, I just kind of smiled and went, yeah, that's cool. I know that you probably paid out the ass for it because it's the right thing to do. But that's what you get. But, you know, so, you know, maybe this is why, you know, Ford was claiming that they were better set for the future than the rest of them. And it might be because that they saw that Toyota was doing really well with the hybrid thing and that people want this stuff. This is what it all comes down to. You know, and Ford was one of the worst offenders of this, of making vehicles that nobody fucking wanted. But people want these vehicles. And it's not just for green reasons. It's for pocketbook reasons. You know, even though gas prices have dropped in the past year, it ain't going to stay that way. People don't believe that it's going to that gas prices are going to stay relatively low compared to where they were a year ago. So those that can get their hand on it, you know, and people are actually selling them used for more than their retail value. I mean, come on. When have you ever heard about that from a car? It's usually the second you drive it off the lot, 10 grand vanishes. But, you know, So maybe Ford will be last man standing. Hey, you know. We know what it is like to be a last man standing, but... Yeah, thinking $1.93 is low, you know, but I mean, it was almost $4 a year ago. Prices haven't quite dropped that much here in Australia, but then again, the rest of the world pays more for petrol than the United States does. Always, probably always will. I'm looking for. Oh, and the other car that she actually sent, and I, like I said, I'll put these in the supplementary links. And I covered this before, the Aptera 2E, which is a really odd-looking vehicle, but I think that this is probably more what the future of cars are going to be like. And the opening of this says, I'm accelerating, cornering hard on three wheels. Yeah, it's a three-wheeled car, two in the front, one in the back. For anyone that goes, oh! What do you mean, not four wheels? Anyone who studied geometry, a tripod is always stable, unlike a four-legged table. Why do you think all music stands and drum hardware are always tripods? Why is it that, you know, you see lighting push-ups? They're tripods, because tripods balance, self-balance. Yeah, you know, but that's all math and stuff like that. Let's see what this is that Tim's sending me here to. Greencar.com. Oh, interesting. Okay, so this is like a comparison site here. If you're curious to, looks like if you want to do research on green cars, check this out, greencar.com. Their featured article is five things you need to know about the 2010 Prius. And they talk about the Renault electric car. Right on. Oh, this is quite cool. And you can find cars by make, by type, miles per gallon, or year. Oh, this is interesting. Seems to have resources on all the different green or so-called green technologies and alternative fuels, hybrid, electric, ethanol, hydrogen, natural gas, plug-ins, and biodiesel. What a cool site. I'll definitely have to have a good look at that. And anyone else is interested, greencar.com. Thanks, Tim. and there you go. All you got to do is say something, and then Gene comes up with it. This is why he is the news ninja. Over at Autoblog Green. He goes, Greenlings, why do so many green cars have only three wheels? Says, you may have noticed that a lot of new green cars not only lack a large carbon footprint, but they also seem to be missing something else, a fourth wheel. Recently, the three-wheel configuration has been appearing in various forms of vehicles, from the space-age Aptera to a bit more than a motorcycle Piaggio MP3. With the seeming flood of tricycles sloshing about, one question needs a clear answer. Why do so many green cars have three wheels? As you might imagine, there are a variety of possible reasons why one would design a vehicle this way. Hit the jump and take a triacular journey. Why? Sometimes referred to as a tri-car, three-wheeled conveyances have been with us since the beginning of the automobile. The very first motor car, built in 1885 by Carl Benz and called the Benz Patton's Motor Wagon, featured only one wheel in the front and two in the back, although his next design had four wheels and became the popular standard. Trikes continue to be built from then until now. There are two different ways to configure a three-wheeled vehicle. Placing one wheel in front and two in the back, a la the original, is usually referred to as the Delta configuration. The reason most cited for using this format is cost. It is a relatively easy way to keep the cost low, since not only is the steering mechanism cheaper to build and more simple to engineer, it removes obviously the expense of a fourth wheel and all the bits that go along with that. The downside of this design is just as obviously stability. Although that might seem like a significant drawback, the truth is there are millions of vehicles, mostly tuk-tuks, that I operate on a daily basis, as the drivers understand their vehicle's lack of cornering ability stay within their safety parameters. Okay, well, I might be being proved wrong there as far as the stability, but I don't think that, that would necessarily always be true, because if it's a bit more equilateral triangle and it's low enough to the ground, I would think that it would have fine stability. But anyway, autogreen.com. It's a great, great blog, too, there on new technologies when it comes to motor vehicles. But, yeah, also less materials. I guess that the obvious thing I missed, which is, you know, the steering mechanism. Hell of a lot cheaper, you know, just like a rod going straight down, turny, as opposed to something a whole lot more complex. So we're going to take a little bit of a break here, come back and get into playing some music to finish out a Sunday night as we do here. If you have anything you want to jump in on, the phone line is open, 304-574-7811. 304-574-7811. And this one is for the people that shower before and after work. Jimmy Barnes. You're listening to Foxed Up. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Working hard to make a living, bringing shelter from the rain. A father's son left to carry on blue denim in his vein. Whoa, he's a working class man.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right.
We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long...
$95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention
$24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
This is the Head On Radio Network. The Horn.
But outside of Washington, some strong Republican voices have said the stimulus package is needed now. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Charlie Crist of Florida, he supports the package.
This program will help us with education, with health care, Medicaid specifically, infrastructure. These are the kinds of things that produce jobs. It could mean $13 billion to the Sunshine State. It comes at a time when we need it. People need jobs. It's about jobs, jobs, jobs.
He suggests that you and Republican Party leaders here in Washington are on the wrong side of the biggest issue, jobs.
Well, no, you know, with all due respect to the governor, I understand where he's coming from. Having been a state official, I know what it means to get those dollars when you're in tight time. But you've got to look at the entire package. You've got to look at what's going to create sustainable jobs. What this administration is talking about is making work. It is creating
that's
work.
That's a job.
No, it's not a job. A job is something that a business owner creates. It's going to be long term. What he's creating
so a job
is
a doesn't count if it's a government job.
What the hell is that shit?
One to go. Hit third hour of Fox with Onox. Use the show at 843-2366. Let's get back to John on the Head On Radio Network.
Welcome back to Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and we're in the third hour. It's just coming up on 3 minutes past 11 p.m. on the East Coast in the United States. Just after 3 in the afternoon, Monday here in Sydney, Australia, and we're entering the music hour. And I've got a song here from Ben Birch, which I'm going to play here in a minute, but I will fulfill to open up with the first request that I've gotten for Music Hour. Our friend Tim from L.A. asked for, surprise, surprise, some Rush, because we know that, you know, Tim from L.A. is just a huge Rush fan, and that's a good thing. And so I was sitting there looking, and I went and actually heard this track in a damn long time, and I don't even remember the lyric, but for some reason I have a feeling that it probably plays into what's going on with the financial crisis possibly. So we're going to open up the Music Hour with a bit of Rush off of 1985's Power Windows, The Big Money. Okay, you know, my memory's not so bad. The lyric that Tim posted in the chat room from that. Sometimes building ivory towers, sometimes knocking castles down, sometimes building you a stairway. Lock you underground, it's that old-time religion, it's the kingdom they would rule, it's the fool on television getting paid to play the fool. You know, I tell you, just having a conversation with Tim in the chat room, you know, Neil Peart's given all the credit for his, you know, unbelievably precise technical drumming. But he is the chief lyricist of the band, and I know that he spends months writing lyrics for their records, and I think it's always been the unsung thing. Everybody talks about what a great technical three-piece they are. But you really listen to the lyrics, and there's some great stuff in there. So we're going to make it a Rush 2 for Tim, because this is my favorite Rush song of all time. Off of Permanent Waves, 1980. It's the atheist theme song, in my mind, Free Will.
Oh,
a killer free will. And you know, I do dig that band for the fact that they love to play with funky time. And the verses in that song alternate time signatures every other measure. 6-8 for one, 7-8 for the next. Or if you really want to count a lot, it's 13-8. That's just, but that, no drummer, no conductor would actually ever do that. They'll just go a bar of six, a bar of seven, a bar of six, a bar of seven. it's a lot easier to count. So now we're going to move on to something that I don't think I've ever heard. This is from the hardest working man in liberal talk, Mr. Ben Birch. Now, he sent me a little message in Gmail chat when I was playing Smoke Two Joints from Sublime. He goes, "You're killing me with this." So he sent me a track, and he's told me about this band. I think he may have sent me this track before, but I can't quite remember. He's going to send me another one shortly. But I don't know what this is going to be like, but I reckon it'll be good. This is a band called Bong Water. And the title of it is The Power of Pussy. From Mr. Ben Birch. That's why he can do so many amazing things. One of his favorite bands, Bong Water. Any darn thing they're told, especially if it sounds like something they already believe. That was great, Ben. I dig that. Was that an Annie DeFranco sample in there, or was that actually the singer? I'm going to have to check it out. Ben sent me a Wikipedia page. Ann Mangeson is the performance artist, I guess, who's part of this, or who is the brains of this. How cool. We're going to move on to... Yeah, Tim thinks it's an awesome song, too. I thought that was really cool. I like it. Great noise. Nice, noisy, ugly guitars. There's definitely always a place for that. But we're gonna move on to the song that will always be in the playlist this hour, because it's, regardless of what the issue is at this moment of time, or this moment in time, the one thing we always must remember, each and every one of us, is to please stay human. Mr. Michael Ferranti and Spearhead. This is the song of the moment.
Starvation is a creation of the devil, the rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow. Bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert. Dried up like the... Full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on the record. Full of life like a man gone to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring. Baritone like a Robeson recording. I'm giving thanks for being human every morning. Morning, morning. Because the street light with the sound of boom bap, can I hear it once again? Boom bap, tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap, can I hear it once again? Boom bap, but tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Be resistant the negativity, we keep it at a distance. Call for backup and I'll give you some assistance. Like a lifesaver deep in the ocean. Stay afloat here upon the funky motion. Rock and roll upon the waves of the season. Hold your breath and your underwater breathing. To be rhyming without a real reason is to claim but not to practice a religion. If television is the drug of the nation, satellite is immaculate reception. Beaming in, they can look and they can listen. So you see, don't believe in the system. To legalize you will give you your freedom. You want rights, ask them to read them. But every flower got a right to be blooming. Stay human, because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. Because are the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Aha. We people make the beauty of the world. Stay human. Y2K and 2 is a moment in time we find that we can open up a heart that's locked or been broken by the pain of words not spoken, nor shot by guns or still smoking. Cartwrights out on the Ponderosa or drive by banging Testarossa. We need to heed the words of Dalai Lama, or at least the words of your mama. Take a mental trip to the Bahamas. Steam your body in a stereo sauna, sauna, comma. Because the streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? I tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive with the sound of boom bap. But can I hear it once again? Boom bap. But tell your neighbor, tell a friend. Every flower got a right to be blooming. The streets are alive.
alive with the sound of boom bap. Can I hear it once again? Boom bap. I tell your neighbor, tell a friend, every flower got a right to be blooming. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. All the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Ha 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 ha. Because all the freaky people make the beauty of the world. Stay human.
And there's just nothing else to add to that song. And I'm sitting there kind of looking around. Okay, what's John going to play next? What's John going to play next? And I just kind of, I'm scanning around, and I'm going to have to go back to my high school thrash metal roots here. If Barack Obama had been a metalhead back in the day, I would think that this song would have run through his mind when dealing with the Republicans recently. And this is off of 1987's Among the Living, and it's a track called Caught in a Mosh. And, you know, mosh pit is that big dancing pit in the front of a metal show. But there's this line in there that's that is, talking to you is like clapping with one hand. So from me to the GOP, for the new president. Oh, we could do some AC/DC in a bit there, Tim. Akadak is always good. Shit, I'm in Australia. AC/DC is always fine. But for this, it's time to thrash a bit for the stupidity of the GOP. Anthrax, Caught in a Mosh. We'll be right back. anthrax. I'm sorry. That really, really just goes, takes me straight back to being about 20, 18, 20. Actually, I would have been, yeah, I would have been 18 when that track came out. And we've had one sent from ELO, the wonderful woman who runs our chat room and has also been helping me get the new website happening as I've been driving her crazy with a learning curve. But she figured that this was a really, really good one for the Republicans. Nice pick. I never would have thought of this one. Kelly Osbourne and Shut Up.
You say I should do it differently. I don't necessarily. They're trying to tell me your beliefs. Your point of view is pretty screwed to me. Do this, do that, on track. Do me a favor and don't talk back. Round and round in the conversation always ends where it began. Round and round and I need a vacation. I got a headache from you. Don't want to hear your voice. Shut up. Nothing you say me. Blah 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 blah. That's what it sounds like you said to me. You never knew brain had gas. There's so much beauty in what we have. You must have better things that you can do.
Killer track. I know it's all poppy and everything, but what a killer track. Thank you, Susan. That was fantastic. And just to kind of, I don't know, I started going on a really punky vibe because it just suddenly started going there, but I pulled it back. And I don't know. I don't know why I feel like playing this song, but it is a favorite of mine. Band that I really, really dug back in the 70s and 80s, Foreigner, who I just always thought was just a really, really great band. I've always dug this song. This really applied during the Bush years, but I've just always dug this song. And you know, people remember Double Vision and, you know, the more pop and more sexually charged stuff. But then there's some more thoughtful stuff. I remember when I first played this years ago on when I was doing the morning version of the show and Agnes was producing, I played this as a track of the day, and she was completely blown away. She's like, I don't think I've ever heard this. And I just reckon this is one of Foreigner's greatest tracks. And this is At War with the World.
And I never secure, just like you.
Foreigner there, and we're going to move on to some Australian stuff. I was talking about playing some AC/DC before, but actually I'm going to go slightly less obvious. Great band. I think I've played this track before. The Living End, awesome three-piece band, drums, double bass, and Chris Chaney has turned into one of the most unbelievably technically apt and fiery guitar players I have ever had the pleasure to do monitors for. I only did one gig with him once. And I was on Chris's side of the stage and was just absolutely smoked by this guy. I mean, I always knew that they were a cool band. It's kind of like punk rockabilly. But, man, this guy is just a monster. And the fact that they haven't done bigger things in the States, I think, is a huge crime. But this is a band that goes and plays like 300 gigs a year around this country. And I know that they have something new out that's really, really good. But this is off of 1998's album, self-titled album, The Living End. This is Prisoner of Society. Check out this son of a bitch on guitar.
We thought we got one.
All right, because that was so good, I'm going to have to play another one. And off of the same record, this is their debut album from 1998. But I think that this is their signature track, All Torn Down. And this was, you know, that kind of fuck the establishment song of an Australian generation of young people. And this is just a great song. And I'll have to find some of the newer stuff. Maybe I'll get some of the newer stuff and play it next week. Because to hear where Chris Chaney has come as a guitar player over the past decade is just unbelievable. But also from 1998's The Living End, All Torn Down. And this gets them moshing at the gig. Enjoy. Australia's The Living End, and the new album is called White Noise, and you can find out more about them at thelivingend.com, and they're on tour right now supporting the new album, and seriously, one of the most explosive and exciting bands I've seen, and like I said, Chris Chaney, to watch him on guitar, There's like this cross between Brian Setzer and Eddie Van Halen, if that makes any sense. But that's really what it is. Really, really, you know, just stuff. And that magic of a power trio. There really is something magical about that format in a band. Just because I guess there's no one stepping on your toes. Everyone's got their own little spot well defined, and there's plenty of room to be fancy, be aggressive, be explosive. Before we get out of here, I was going to cover this, and it was getting away from me, but then Betsy sent it to me. I guess after playing Smoke Two Joints. I saw this the other day in the New York Times. There's a post here about, in a likely Obama pick, some find hope for a shift in drug policy. Out of Seattle, Washington State limits the possession of marijuana except for certain medical purposes. Hempfest is not one of them. Yet each summer, when the event draws thousands to Seattle waterfront to call for decriminalization of marijuana, participants light up in clear view of police officers and they rarely get arrested. Police officers patrolling are courteous and respectful, said Allison Holcomb, drug policy director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Washington. One reason for officers' approach, said Ms. Holcomb and others, will follow law enforcement in Seattle is leadership by Republican Jill Kerlikowske, our Jill Kerlikowske, the chief of Seattle Police Department, and officials in Obama's administration say the president's choice to become the head of the official national drug control policy known as the Drug Czar. The anticipated selection of Chief Kerlikowske has given hope to those who want a national drug policy to shift from an emphasis on arrest and prosecution of methods more like those employed in Seattle, intervention, treatment, and reduction of problems drug use can cause, a tactic known as harm reduction. Chief Kerlikowske is not necessarily regarded as having forcefully led those efforts, but he has not gotten in the way of them. And so, you know, because, I mean, seriously, the money that's wasted on marijuana possession charges and jailing people for something that shouldn't be a crime, you know. And then if we just made it legal and taxed it, so much of our monetary problems could be solved. The math was crunched not long ago. If California actually just taxed, you know, like $25 a plant for a registered grower. Now, this was about a year ago that these numbers were crunched. I don't know how much has changed now, but it could have actually saved all of California's debt problems and budget problems. It is the biggest cash crop in the world, and because we have made it illegal, no one's reaping the benefit, you know, any benefit to if it were actually legally traded. And, you know, you all know this, but, you know, it used to actually be, you know, it was a cash crop in America. In fact, you had to grow hemp, pretty much, you know, for rope and paper and all that stuff and everything else. But that's a whole nother show's material for another day. And I see Tim was digging the Living End stuff. Right on, man. Grab that new album, White Noise. It's really, really, really good. Yeah, they're a fun band. And maybe this time there was some talk that they're going to go to the States this year. So if I hear that something like that is happening, I will let you know, because I really think it's a show that you will enjoy. And Chris, the guys in the band are really, really nice blokes, too. So with that, we're going to kind of wrap things up here for a Sunday night. Thanks for being with us, folks, here on the Head On Radio Network. Don't forget, this is a listener-supported radio network. There's a nice new flash little form on the front of the website. You can go in there and leave your stuff to keep the conversation going. Thanks to Ben Birch at the White Rose Society for the streaming and the archives. This archive will be up shortly. Thanks to ELO, Gene, everybody who helps do everything on this network. We couldn't do it without you. As we say here, be good, be green. We'll see you next week.
And the sign said, long-haired freaky people need not apply. So I tucked my hair up under my hat, and I went in to ask him why. He said, you look like a fine, upstanding young man. I think you do. So I took off my hat, I said, imagine that. Huh, me, working for you. Whoa. Sign, everywhere.
have a membership card to get inside.